must be something you want to know about how to meditate. Yes?
What's the difference between paying attention to the breath and paying attention to the sensations of the breath?
Very good question. What's the difference between paying attention to the sensations of the breath and paying attention to the breath? The simple answer is the sensations of the breath are real. The breath itself is a figment of your imagination. Okay. Well, all right, let's back off a little bit and look at this. You know, if we're really truly present and really honest, what do we actually know? The only thing that we have direct knowledge of is our sensory experience. So it's true. We experience some sensations, and our mind identifies those sensations as, first of all, it says, oh, those are sensations that are coming from the nose area. And then your mind says, oh, I recognize those sensations. Those are the sensations of the air moving in and out through the nose, right? But if you think about it, where does the mind, how does the mind know that there is such a thing as a nose? Well, let's look at it another way. How does your brain know that it's inside a body that has a thing called a nose? Because all that ever comes into brain are nerve impulses. And one nerve impulse looks just exactly like any other nerve impulse. But you were born, and this newborn brain was having all these nerve impulses come into it, and it tried to make sense of it. And by correlating all the different things that happened in the first few weeks and months of your life, your brain constructed an image of its body, including a nose. And as this brain continued to learn, it constructed a whole lot of concepts like in and out. You know, there's the inside of the body and there's outside of the body, and there's these two directions, moving from in to out, moving from out to in. And then there's this stuff that, you know, when the wind blows or you feel a breeze, or this stuff we call air that stimulates the skin. All of this is a story that your mind has made up to explain sensations. But all that's really there, all that's ever been really there, are the sensations themselves. Does that make sense to you? So one part of your one way your answer is, if you pay attention to the sensations of the breath, you're paying attention to what is genuinely real in the present moment, that these sensations are arising. Maybe there really is a nose the way your mind pictures it. Maybe there really is some gas called air the way that your mind imagines it. But who will ever know for sure? But the sensations, they're real. They're genuine. The reason that we do this is we're trying to be truly present. And those sensations arise and pass away independently of the conscious activities of our mind. The breath doesn't. The breath is something that your mind makes up. And it's possible, the same way that it happens in dreams, it's possible for your mind to make up a story that is really disconnected from the sensations. And you can visualize or imagine breath moving into your body when that isn't really what you're experiencing. Whether or not it's happening is beside the point. You're not experiencing. All you're experiencing is sensations, right? And so some people, you say, meditate on the breath, and they're focused on a mind-generated concept, the breath, and they'll picture it moving out into space and coming back into their body and things like that. And so you're not getting in touch with reality. It's limiting what you have to work with. Now, you're not going to be able to perceive the sensations of the breath as they really are initially, but as you meditate longer, you will. When you begin, in the traditional teachings, the it's called the appearance of the breath. The word nimitta means appearance. And the first appearance of the breath, or the parikama nimitta is what the Buddha called it. The first appearance of the breath is of air moving in and out of the nose. But that's all concepts. That's all story made up by the mind. As you get to about the intermediate stage of meditation, and your attention is stabilized, and your mindfulness has become very clear and very sharp, you begin to see, well, there is no breath, there's just these sensations. Yes, my mind believes that that's what accounts for these sensations. But then you start to experience it as it really is. Okay, and this is called the acquired appearance. It's the second transformation that your meditation object takes, where you start to see it as it really is. And then there is a third stage that is when you get to the full development of samatha, that you can actually withdraw your attention from the sensory input, from the sense organs, and focus your attention on the mental activity that those sensations set in motion in your brain. And so that's the most refined appearance of the breath, and it's called the mental counterpart appearance to the breath. So if you think of it as sensations of the breath from the very beginning, then your approach to your meditation object is more consistent with reality, and it will allow your insight and your conscious awareness to develop in a more genuine and fruitful way. You see what I'm saying there? Yeah. So don't try to force yourself to be able to distinguish sensations separate from conceptualizations, because they follow so quickly that you won't be able to do that until you've been meditating for a while. But by just trying always to think of it as, okay, I'm going to pay attention to the sensations of the breath, rather than allowing yourself to get totally caught up in the story. Okay. Yes?
What do you have to say about pain and discomfort and stiffness that
another person has? Pain and discomfort, yes. Very, very important thing for us to talk about. If you meditate properly, you shouldn't experience any psychological distress. And you may need some help at first keeping meditation from being psychologically stressful. But it's not. Meditation is so simple it can't possibly be stressful. The only thing that can make meditation, quote, hard is that you generate certain kinds of expectations that are not realistic. Meditation is exceedingly simple, and because it's so simple, you succeed at it quickly, and as you succeed at it, it produces a state of mental calm and serenity, which you can enjoy. And it also generates a state of mental clarity, which is actually quite delightful. But on the other hand, when you sit your body completely still, it is going to become uncomfortable. There is no way to avoid that. It is going to become uncomfortable. There's a number of factors involved in that. One is it's going to take you a while to find the absolute best way to sit. Like you're using some straps. I encourage you to put supports under your knees if you need them, or do whatever you need to do to minimize the physical discomfort that can be minimized, but also accept that there is no position you're going to get into that is not going to become uncomfortable after a little while. That is a fact. Now, before I tell you about how to deal with it, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the course of meditation. You're going to reach a point where physical discomfort becomes relatively insignificant. It may be there a bit, but you'll be able to disregard it and not be a problem. Beyond that, you'll come to a point where there is absolutely no physical discomfort. There's a stage in the meditation. If you look at those 10 stages, you might experience it sooner, but you'll definitely experience it in stage 8, where sitting is absolutely, totally painless. It is not only free of every kind of discomfort, it is pleasant. It is so pleasant sitting completely still that even after the end of an hour or an hour and a half, the thought of moving is disturbing and you'd rather stay still and continue to enjoy it. It's okay. So this is where you will come to in your meditation practice. But you're going to go through a period of discomfort. Your body is not used to remaining still. That's one part of it. And another part of it is parts of your mind are going to rebel against this idea of sitting still and training the mind in attentional stability. One of the ways that parts of your mind rebel against this discipline that's being imposed upon them by these other parts of your mind that think meditating is a good idea is that they thrust little discomforts into awareness in such a way that they become huge. You know, and staying still when there's a little tiny itch on the side of your nose can become impossible. So the first step, as I said, is you find the most comfortable way to sit. Then, how do you deal with the discomfort that arises? First of all, as long as you can succeed in letting the discomfort be in the background, what I was talking about earlier, all kinds of distractions in the background, thoughts are in the background, as long, you know, you leave the thoughts in the background while you keep your attention on the meditation object. There's other sensations. Well, let's say a painful knee or an ache between your shoulder blades or a stiff neck or something like that. As long as you can let that be in the background and still remain focused on your meditation object, that's what you do. Okay? And you make it, you make the commitment to yourself that you are not going to move, or that you're going to move absolutely as little as absolutely necessary between when you begin your sit and when the bell rings. Okay? So when this ache comes up, you're going to reach a certain point where the mind keeps going back to it. You can't let it stay in the... It won't stay in the background. It wants to be the object of your attention. When that happens, now what you do, you see you're trying to train the mind to stay wherever intention puts it. And you can finesse the situation. When you realize my attention is going to go to that pain whether I want it to or not, you say, okay, I'm going to make the pain the meditation object. Now I'm intending to pay attention to the pain. So now you're still sustaining the training that's happening. Your mind is still doing what intention wants it to do. You follow me there? Okay. So now you take the pain itself as your meditation object. Well, probably what you're going to experience the first time you do this is, oh man, it's worse than ever. At least before, I was trying to ignore it, you know, but here I am, I'm paying attention to it. Ugh. But try not to move and begin to investigate it. This isn't just, you know, looking at it and saying, oh, there's that nasty pain. Investigate it. So where is it exactly? You know, you've got your eyes closed and somewhere back there. You try to judge exactly where it is. And, okay, is it moving? Is it kind of shifting to one side and then back again? You know, or is it staying still? Is it expanding? Is it contracting? Just investigate it. How would you describe it? Find the appropriate label for it. Is this sharp? No, burning. Yeah, it's more of a burning pain. Okay. Analyze it as to the type. Is it getting more severe or less severe, or does it kind of alternately get more or less severe? What you're doing is you're creating a new relationship with the pain. Instead of, oh, my back hurts. Oh, this is sore. Now, the pain is an object. It's out there. And the mind is objectively examining and investigating the pain, not identifying with it. And so just investigate it and go into it as deeply as you can. As you get good at this, an important thing to begin looking at and say, okay, actually, is there just one sensation or the number of sensations here? Actually, there's a number of different sensations. All right. What is there about this that's unpleasant? What is the part of this that's actually pain? So you can begin to investigate it in that regard too, distinguishing between sensation and the pain that you feel, and letting that come. See how clear that comes. The way you deal with pain is to meditate on it. Now, often what's going to happen is, especially in the beginning of doing this practice, is that you're going to say, okay, I've got to move. I can't do this anymore. So when you realize you're at that point, then you acknowledge it. You say, okay, I'm going to move deliberately. You decide when you're going to move. I'm going to move at the end of the next out-breath, or I'm going to wait 3 full breaths and then I'm going to move. But you intentionally decide when you're going to move. You decide exactly how you're going to move. You say, okay, I've got this pain between my shoulder blades. I'm going to lean forward and I'm going to pull my shoulder blades back and see if it releases it. But you plan it in advance before you do it. You say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. Ready? All right, end of the out-breath, time to do it. Okay. And very mindfully you move, do whatever it is you said you were going to do. You observe what happens. What happens to the pain? Maybe the pain goes away. And then you go back to your original position and wait and see what happens. And sometimes the pain will stay away. Most of the time, it'll come back. And so you just keep doing that. Only move, you know, don't torture yourself. It's not a question of seeing how much suffering you can endure. But when you realize that the time is right, okay, I'm going to go ahead and move and do it very deliberately. But don't move until you have to. Okay, don't resist the temptation as soon as you feel an ache between your shoulder blades to go. Do this, because if you do that, you're going to end up doing it again in another 15 seconds, and then there's going to be a pain somewhere else. And after a while, maybe some of you already know this because it's happened to you. You know, it starts out with one pain. After a while, you're sitting there going like this. You know, you're just until the bell rings. You're just wiggling and fidgeting and readjusting. So I try to avoid that. When you have to move, move. Okay. Sometimes you're going to have to move. But if you keep doing this, you're going to start discovering some very interesting things. You're going to start finding that when you've learned to get into this objective attitude towards the pain, you're going to find that sometimes it ceases to be so disturbing, and you can just go back to your meditation object. It's still there, but it's no longer disturbing. Even better yet, sometimes it ceases to be pain at all. It just becomes, it's a sensation. And when it just becomes a sensation, you can let go of it and go back to the sensations of the breath. It may come back, and you do that again. Most interesting of all is you're going to start discovering more and more often that the pain goes away. It ceases to be pain. And you're on the threshold of a great discovery when that happens. So now, once that's happened to you, you should almost look forward to the next time you experience pain so that you can watch that process. What you're going to discover is that pain really is just a sensation, and all of the unpleasantness and the suffering that we associate with it happens in the mind, and it happens because the mind is resisting that sensation. And once you become aware of that, then you can use that deliberately. That will make bodily pains much, much more easy to manage. And as you continue to practice in that way, you will discover your body adapts to the sitting, your mind calms down, different parts of your mind aren't trying to thrust discomfort into conscious awareness to interrupt the process anymore. And that's where you get to the stage where there's still some discomforts here and there after you've been sitting for 40 minutes, the weight of one leg pressing on the ankle against the cushion, it's now burning and kind of fiery, but hey, it's just a so what kind of thing. You're aware of it, it's in the background, but it doesn't interrupt your meditation. And as you continue, you get to the point where there's no pain at all. But in terms of what I described a few minutes ago, is a clear description of how to deal with discomfort. Sum it up briefly. Avoid moving unless you really have to. As soon as you realize that attention is going to go to the discomfort and you're not going to be able to keep it from, then take the discomfort as a meditation object. Don't keep trying to fight with it. Make that your meditation object. And then take that as a very serious meditation object. Your goal there is to learn what is the true nature of pain and to achieve mastery of pain in that way. You achieve mastery through mindfulness, not through toughing it out, not through overcoming pain by being really tough. Don't do that. Let your mind open up to a new kind of understanding of the nature of pain, which will make it easier for you to deal with any and every kind of pain. Life is full of pain, not just when you're sitting in meditation. And those pains that come when you have a burn or an illness or your arm is crushed or something like that, all of these other very real pains can be dealt with exactly the same way if you master the technique in meditation, where there's no real tissue damage taking place. Other questions? Does everyone feel like you know how to do the sitting practice, what I'm asking you to do? The sensations of the breath at the nose? You know what to do when you realize that your attention has wandered, you've experienced mind wandering and or forgetting? You know what to do? Not good. Does everybody know how to do walking meditation? No? Okay. Anybody else doesn't know how to do walking meditation? Yeah. Okay. Let me show you. To begin with walking meditation, make it your objective, as we've already said, to remain fully in the present. And you're going to have an anchor to keep you in the present, which in this case is going to be the act of walking. And to begin with, make it specifically the sensations on the soles of your feet. Now, you're moving around outdoors. You are exposed to more sound, far more tactile sensation, and you've got your eyes open. So it's a somewhat different situation than sitting meditation. Your senses are far more open and you're active, you're moving. But to begin with, the only thing that you're asking of yourself is not to go out of the present, not to go into the future or the past or start thinking about somewhere else or trying to think of the Linnaean classification for the trees that you see on the hillside or something like that, Some abstract thought. Just stay in the present. Anytime you sense, and you're walking, anytime that you sense that you're losing that sense of being present, use the sensations in the soles of your feet to bring you back. When you walk, I'm going to suggest that you begin by doing what's called step-by-step walking, which means that you take a step and you complete it before the trailing foot moves at all. So this step is completely over with. My weight is on this, and I feel the weight, I feel the pressure in the sole of my foot. Now, I direct my attention from the sole of that foot to the sole of this foot. This is the new focus of my attention, the sole of this foot. And now I observe as I lift and move and place and shift. And then do the same thing with this. So as I walk, I'm shifting my attention from one foot to the next. Use that as an anchor to keep you in the present. You're also practicing directed and sustained attention. You're directing your attention first to one foot, then to the other, and you're sustaining your attention throughout that entire period. You're allowing yourself to be aware of all kinds of other things. Begin to make it an exploration and an investigation. The first thing to explore is walking different speeds. So if you haven't done this before, you first try the step-by-step walking at that rather, not excessively slow, but rather slow speed that I just demonstrated. And then when you feel comfortable with that, and you feel like, you know, you keep your attention on, experiment with what are the different qualities associated with walking faster and slower. So you'll find that if you go really slowly, that you have to keep your mind on what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to lose your balance. And that's a very interesting experience. Wow, okay. So take some opportunity to explore this. And then you might try walking more quickly. It's really easy for my mind to wander. There's almost nothing to keep me in the present here. So that's one thing to explore. And then, as you're walking meditation, there's all kinds of other things. As you're walking along, you're going to be seeing and hearing and feeling things. So, start doing this, you know, that when something catches your eye, wherever you are, you just stop and look at that thing until, you know, just take a moment to, it's caught your attention, it's attracted your attention, so look at it. And then maybe just as a parting step, just sort of become aware of everything else that's in your field of vision. I mean, don't go like that, but just, you know, you were looking at this thing and expand your awareness, take it all in, be there with seeing for a moment. Just be in the place of seeing, and then go back to your walking. And then if you hear something, stop and put all your attention into listening, into hearing for a moment. Or if you feel some sensation on your skin. This is all, you're developing, in both walking and sitting meditation, you're developing the same mental skill of attentional stability and directed and sustained attention and mindful awareness. They both do exactly the same thing, but sitting meditation, as should be obvious, is going to be much more strongly training the attentional stability aspect of things. And the walking meditation is much more strongly developing the mindful awareness aspect of things. And both of them, at some point, begin to really strongly develop that introspective awareness of being aware of your own mind, moment by moment, continuously, of what's happening in your mind. And so, this should give you enough to work on with your walking meditation for a little while. And we can talk more about it, you can ask more questions as we go on. Anyone else have any questions or comments about walking meditation practice? Yes.
So, quite often I end up timing my steps so that I can breathe, you know, naturally and have the step coincide with, say, an in-breath or an out-breath. I guess I feel like getting some more time in on feeling the sensations of the breath. Is there a benefit to that, or are you really trying to do something different with the walking?
There is, you're obviously finding it helpful, and there is a benefit to doing that, but there is a potential to do much more in walking meditation. So I would say do that sort of thing while you feel like it's necessary to help stabilize your attention, and then experiment with letting go of that and seeing what you can do with a less structured kind of approach.
So let me ask a follow-up. It's hard to not think that walking meditation is just a way to take a break from sitting meditation, and that the real deal mm-hmm. is the sitting meditation. You know, but you can't sit for 8 hours; you have to walk. And so I feel myself taking it less seriously. Mm-hmm. Read these stories about people that really accomplish things in meditation. It's always sitting because of the more refined attention and less going on. So mm-hmm. it's a little hard for me to give it its own right.
Okay, you do want to do that. I mean, first of all, it is really true. The walking meditation is a break from sitting meditation. I mean, it's a break from having to be completely still. It's a break from holding such a tight focus, because you're exercising a much broader awareness. And so it is a break from practicing in one particular way. And there's nothing wrong with not taking it too seriously. Try not to take sitting too seriously either.
But a break from the walking.
Yeah, that's right. Sitting is a break from walking meditation. So don't take it too seriously. But it is a very powerful meditation. And anybody, I know what you feel like, because I felt like that for a long time too. Like walking meditation, why are we even doing this? I guess this is because they know that we can't sit for that long and we have to do something else, but well, it's not really like meditating. And then I discovered that it's actually an incredibly powerful method. And really, I discovered that mostly when I was developing some real skill in meditation, because the attitude I had, I felt like, well, I don't, you know, okay, so I'm walking, but I don't really want to waste my time walking. Let me see what I can do with this. And I discovered, whoa, this is incredible. So try to make that discovery. It is really powerful. It's every bit as powerful in its own way as the sitting practice is. And it is underused and it's underappreciated. And it's really easy to have that kind of, you know, attitude that you have. But try to really discover, you know, what it is that I'm talking about. When you do, you will be really impressed. You'll feel like, wow, what have I been missing all this time? And as a matter of fact, I would encourage everyone to make some, you know, a part of your regular practice routine to include some walking meditation in that, rather than the only time you ever do it is when you're on retreat. You should make it a part of your daily practice as well. Walking meditation is really kind of bridging that gap between what we do when we're sitting and what we're doing in the rest of our daily life. And it's still simple by comparison with most of our daily interactions with other people and things like that. It's still a lot simpler, it's still a lot more controlled, but it's moving in that direction. And the more you learn to effectively use the walking meditation, the easier you are going to find it is to sustain that sort of high degree of mindfulness and that kind of meditative calm and clarity in your daily life as well. I can tell when somebody's discovered the value of walking meditation because they really get into it. And it's sort of like, you know, there's a stage you go through where, you know, the bell rings and the sitting is going so well, I don't want to get up, you know, I'm going to stay here and keep doing this. The same thing will happen. They'll be walking and the time goes inside saying, no, this is too good. I'm learning too much. It's too wonderful. I'm going to keep walking for the next 45 minutes. So.
And you did mention that people could do that.
What's that?
You mentioned that people could do
that. Yes, absolutely. You can do that. Now, please, if you be honest with yourself. If you're saying, well, okay, I think I'll keep walking, but the real reason is that, you dread going back and sitting in the meditation hall. That's not really what I'm talking about. But for both walking and sitting, if it's going really well for you and you feel like the right thing to do is to continue it because you're getting a lot out of it, then continue it. You can deviate from the schedule in that regard. It's all right. But except for that, try to stay with the schedule. Okay? Anything else? So you know how to sit? You know how to walk? We got lots of time to elaborate on these themes. Hopefully you have a useful perspective for going through the next week.